AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, everything is clearly going very well. I am especially glad to hear that the two new friends have now made him acquainted with their whole set. All these, as I find from the record office, are thoroughly reliable people, steady, consistent scoffers and worldlings, who without any spectacular crimes are progressing quietly and comfortably towards our father's house. You speak of their being great laughers. I trust this does not mean that you are under the impression that laughter as such is always in our favor. The point is worth some attention. I divide the causes of human laughter into joy, fun, the joke proper, and flippancy. You will see the first among friends and lovers reunited on the eve of a holiday. Among adults, some pretext in the way of jokes is usually provided, but the facility with which the smallest witticisms produce laughter at such a time shows that they are not the real cause. What that real cause is, we do not know. Something like it is expressed in much of that detestable art which the humans call music, and something like it occurs in heaven, a meaningless acceleration in the rhythm of celestial experience quite opaque to us. Laughter of this kind does us no good, and should always be discouraged. Besides, the phenomenon is of itself disgusting and a direct insult to the realism, dignity, and austerity of hell. Fun is closely related to joy, a sort of emotional froth arising from the play instinct. It is very little use to us. It can sometimes be used, of course, to divert humans from something else which the enemy would like them to be feeling or doing, but in itself it has wholly undesirable tendencies. It promotes charity, courage, contentment, and many other evils. The joke proper, which turns on sudden perception of incongruity, is a much more promising field. I am not thinking primarily of indecent or bawdy humour, which, though much relied upon by second-rate tempters, is often disappointing in its results. The truth is that humans are pretty clearly divided on this matter into two classes. There are some to whom no passion is as serious as lust, and for whom any indecent story ceases to produce lasciviousness precisely insofar as it becomes funny. There are others in whom laughter and lust are excited at the same moment and by the same things. The first sort joke about sex because it gives rise to many incongruities. The second cultivate incongruities because they afford a pretext for talking about sex. If your man is of the first type, bawdy humour will not help you. I shall never forget the hours which I wasted, hours to be of unbearable tedium, with one of my early patients in bars and smoking rooms before I learned this rule. Find out which group the patient belongs to, and see that he does not find out. The real use of jokes or humour is in quite a different direction, and it is specially promising among the English, who take their sense of humour so seriously that a deficiency in this sense is almost the only deficiency at which they feel shame. Humour is for them the all-consoling, and mark this, the all-excusing grace of life. Hence, it is invaluable as a means of destroying shame. If a man simply lets others pay for him, he is mean. If he boasts of it in a jocular manner and twits his fellows with having been scored off, he is no longer mean, but a comical fellow. Mere cowardice is shameful. Cowardice boasted of with humorous exaggerations and grotesque gestures can be passed off as funny. Cruelty is shameful unless the cruel man can represent it as a practical joke. A thousand bawdy or even blasphemous jokes do not help towards a man's damnation so much as his discovery that almost anything he wants to do can be done, not only without the disapproval, but with the admiration of his fellows, if only it can get itself treated as a joke. And this temptation can be almost entirely hidden from your patient by that English seriousness about humour. Any suggestion that there might be too much of it can be represented to him as puritanical or as betraying a lack of humour. But flippancy is the best of all. In the first place, it is very economical. Only a clever human can make a real joke about virtue, or indeed about anything else. Any of them can be trained to talk as if virtue were funny. Among flippant people, the joke is always assumed to have been made. No one actually makes it, but every serious subject is discussed in a manner which implies that they have already found a ridiculous side to it. If prolonged, the habit of flippancy builds up around a man the finest armor plating against the enemy that I know, and it is quite free from the dangers inherent in the other sources of laughter. It is 1,000 miles away from joy. It deadens instead of sharpening the intellect, and it excites no affection between those who practice it. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
So welcome to Screwtape Letters Podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Times. I'm Ian Faith, and to our listeners, please log on to our website. We're building a great audience on there, and we've got some great extra content from some extra guests, some Easter eggs for you to listen to, and we're also actually remastering all of these 31 letters plus the intro and the outro as well. So they're available on the website, and then eventually awesome. We'll make them available further afield as well. So, today, we've actually got a special guest in Galen. You can do the introduction.
Yeah, really excited to introduce my friend, Corey Hirsch. Known Corey for several years now. We go to church together. Yeah. You work with my wife at Arizona Christian University for the past several Indeed. Years. And it's really been a pretty great honor and privilege to know you. You're a fantastic, fantastic musician, one of the best musicians I know. Very humble, you never know it. But you've also worked in a lot of really high level professional contexts in the music industry. You've made your way up pretty far, and really saw how the demonic forces are alive and at work, not just in industry, but specifically the arts. You know, and I'll let you share more of your story if you'd like to. But really wanted to pull you in as a guest because we were talking a while back and found out that, like, I think you said, like, every summer when you're driving on vacation, you guys listen to Screwtape Letters. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, here's a guy who knows culture, can see how the demonic realm operates in especially your industry and music. And you love Screwtape Letters, so I'm really excited to bring you on. Thanks for being with us.
It's an honor. It's funny that you'd mention that because I feel like nobody knows this book. And once upon a time, it was classic reading. Everyone had to read it, you know.
Right.
And you talk about it, and you have to explain yourself, which creates a great conversation about C.S. Lewis. But there was a lot of things in this book that, just like the Bible, I didn't understand the language until I got older. But there was still that seed that was there in the back of my mind that, as I discovered life as an adult, that became more clear. This chapter we're about to get into is one of those, because I'm a big fan of humor. Anyone who knows me,
sure.
I'm also a very serious person, so humor is kind of like my reprieve, so I don't, you know, combust, right? I'm not British, though, so I don't know if my humor is that good.
I got you covered.
Okay, all right. But as far as the industry is concerned, I guess I went as far as you can go. I joke about this sometimes, but without becoming corrupted by it, because there's that moment where you have to step through the door to say yes or no to things, or to even just buy your compliance or lack of protest to what happens, you realize that you're in it and not of it, or you're definitely in it and of it, because there's no way to not choose that. And fortunately, having moved away from that, and I now have great friendships with people who are really talented, but also understand that I'm in a great company now, especially with you, since we were able to talk about a lot of these things from the past.
Right.
Corey, you and I have seen recently, going to the Grammys and the MTV Music Awards and things like that, people openly promoting demonic influence in their music, right? It's not even something that is hidden. This is wide open.
Celebrated.
It's celebrated and it's in full force. I've seen it as well, where it makes you either make a choice or comply. And usually the making the choice gets you X'd out of some of the things that you want to do musically.
I agree.
And I don't think there's any more proud moment than looking back and knowing that you made a moral choice for the right thing to do.
Yeah, it's hard at the time. It's never easy, but it's always worth it. And then your generations after you will always appreciate it, of course.
Yeah, for sure. So letter 11.
Yeah.
Everything's going well for Wormwood. Screwtake's excited. he's buzzed with him, right? He's just so excited. He's like, the patient has got a couple of friends who are, obviously, they're materialistic, they're scornful, they take nothing seriously.
Bunch of scoffers, the whole set of them.
Yep. Yeah, well said. And they have super high opinions of themselves. And I think that Screwtape is getting this letter back from Wormwood, and Wormwood's thinking, this is easy. We've got him right now. So C.S. Lewis delves in here, and he uses very much the English sense of humor and English sarcasm, which someone who grew up there, was born there, it is live and well, and it's considered a virtue over there. It just is. If you're not sarcastic, you're not English.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
It's true,
yeah.
Right? But then the way C.S. Lewis breaks these down into four categories, it made me sit down and think. It really did, because I think I'd been one of all four of them.
Probably. Well, there's four categories, but they function as a hierarchy. Right. So from top down, you have joy, which is, or I guess you could say bottom up. Joy is a lot deeper. It's a lot more meaningful. The roots are a lot deeper. It's a deep well. Fun is not quite as deep, but it still has a good solid foundation. The joke proper. You're starting to get into some more superficial stuff, but becomes better territory, more easy territory for the enemy to kind of, throw in lewdness and all that stuff. Right. And then flippancy, which is basically cynicism and sarcasm.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, interesting you say from the bottom up. That's the way we would look at it, but in reverse within the letters, because joy is closer to heaven.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And therefore, the Screwtape's seeing it from the other way round.
Right.
Let's dig in.
Awesome.
The joy. Let's cover it both in, Corey, with your musical background as well. Obviously, there's a sense of joy that you get through music, and there's that sense of joy, especially through worship music, that just brings us, much closer to God. Talk about your experience with worship music, writing it, producing it, making it, and engaging with it as well.
Well, just coming from church and having a wonderful two services with worship, you recognize that this is the ultimate goal, is celebrating joy, understanding what joy is. And, of course, Screwtape doesn't have a clue. Seems very afraid of joy because of its immense power. Joy is in all circumstances. But in worship, we are... We're trying to find that thin place, as our pastor talks about, and also the thing that music can do, which is very hard to define. But you know when you are joyful in worship, no matter your circumstances in your life, and music heightens that. I think even uses the word accelerates over here.
A meaningless acceleration in the rhythm of celestial experience.
That's what we're experiencing.
Yeah.
You know, as far as music is concerned, joy can exist in other things too, including intimacy. You know, and we understand that even taking a walk, we hear that in a previous letter, just going outside and experiencing nature points to God, because everything does. Everything that God created points to Him if done in the right way, in the healthy way. And music can be done that way, too. It can also be perverted.
Yeah.
And music in the industry wants to, because the enemy knows how powerful it is, and wants to pervert it in a way that we don't see, but also we're trying to transcend, and we end up descending instead because of it's attached to lust, or it's attached to desire for more money or more things or power or intrigue or anything like that. But in worship, it is a pure form.
Interesting you said about taking a walk, because in one of our earlier discussions, in one of the earlier letters, we talk about how, you know, you can go outside and see God in creation, but you get this amazing cell phone and there's nothing divine about it.
Good point.
You know, and it's very apparent.
Yeah.
It isn't even like nuanced. It's not. It's just a thing that man created. It's probably one of the best things that man's created to date, right? And it still doesn't compete with
natural beauty
and the wonders of the world.
Right.
That you absolutely see the divine in.
Well, we're just walking outside last night, and I'm showing the constellations to my kids. I don't know. It seemed like an obvious thing to do, but they don't look up.
Right.
And I have to remind myself to do the same thing. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, he talks about, you know, joy, and when I think about joy, I think it can be nuanced, because I think people can say, oh, I'm joyful, but I think they just mean they're happy. Because I think there's joy is a sense that I think transcends just being happy, right?
And I think it can transcend circumstance. I think you can be going through a difficult time, but still be joyous.
Right.
Joy is not necessarily happiness. The two emotions can overlap quite a bit, you know, on the Venn diagram, so to speak.
Yeah.
But they're not the same thing.
But we've said this before, right, where anxiety is demonic. The idea of conquering anxiety with joy,
because
it's hard to be anxious and joyous at the same time.
You can't experience those emotions at the same
time. Right.
Yeah.
So I think, and if worship music gets you to a place of joy, when you're feeling anxious, lean into worship music.
Yeah.
Find your favorite artists to actually, you know, get in there and listen to. Ones that bring you closer to God, and ones that make you, yeah, just in that place of joy where you want to sing along, where you want to praise, and you want to be there.
My wife is exceptionally good at this. I mean, I watch her, and I can tell she's having, you know, a reaction to the circumstance, and she puts on worship music, and she activates her joy.
Wow.
You know, and I see that happen in real time. It's not, I'm waiting for joy to overwhelm me. No, she's like, I'm going to
turn on
the joy switch. Yeah, exactly. And that's usually with worship music.
Yeah, and it's finding that in that walk with Christ, I've had moments where, and they're not fleeting moments, there's actually a lot of them, where I feel a extreme joy in my relationship with Jesus Christ. It isn't just minor. It's like extreme, but maybe earlier in my life, earlier in the walk, I was like, I'm absolutely 100% believe in Jesus Christ. He died, he went to the cross, he rose in 3 days. I believe that beyond, but there wasn't that extreme joy or that joy in there.
Mm.
It was more, I believe that. When I love that I've got to that place where even we were praying at dinner the other night with my brother in town, and I had this real overwhelming sense of joy that feeling so blessed for everything in our lives, even though everything isn't perfect. and it isn't like, oh, it's easy to be joyous when everything's perfect. No, this was a moment of extreme joy, and not everything was going good.
Right.
Well, you know, for the believer, the joy of the Lord is our strength, it says.
Well, also the joy of the cross, you know, it's the idea that something that it's meant to induce shame. And joy can overcome that too, and a torture instrument, and knowing that we can get through these circumstances. I mean, that was a bad day for Jesus, I mean, then his followers had to have a bad day like that too. I mean, let's face it, every single person that confessed his name had to suffer a horrible death, except for John. But it was this. Well, they tortured him too. I mean, he shouldn't have lived through those things. But I'll tell you what, we might be in that kind of year as Christians.
Yeah.
That and humor will help us a lot too, is why I like this chapter. But the idea of joy is going to be in these circumstances when we have a tough time seeing through this tunnel.
Yeah. Yeah. But for Jesus, it was the joy that was set before him that mm-hmm. he endured the cross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Joy is one of those things, and I think we need to lean into this more, because I think this is a really great takeaway for listeners. This is a really great thing for people to try and attain in their lives, and not to just have it as fleet and just say, well, I'm happy, I laugh at jokes, I watch a few comedies, and I'm sort of happy. I think you get into that next step will change lives.
Mm.
And if you can do it now, we've talked before about, I think it was in letter 6 or 7, about the demonic wanting you not to congregate and commune with other people.
Right.
Right.
I think that for people who are also in that moment within their world where they're maybe suffering a little bit and struggling to find joy, get into a church where they're worshiping loud.
Yeah.
And the energy is palpable.
We've said this before, like, fear is contagious.
Yes.
So is courage, and so is joy, quite frankly.
Right.
You know, get in a place where there's the joy of the Lord, and pursue joy. Well, you know, the enemy tries to steal, kill, and destroy, and joy is one of those things that he's trying to steal from
right.
us. We're supposed to have, that our joy would be full. You know, that's God's will for his kids.
Well, it's funny because I'm going to bring up something about my childhood. I went to a Church of Christ. And it was very austere at times, not always, but you could tell that when the kids were running around, there was like, oh, we can't have that in church. And and there was joy in worship, and they sang their hearts out. But that sense of laughter in the hallways was always looked down upon. And what I love about what happens in this chapter, in this letter, is that there's nothing undignified about laughter in its original purpose.
Right.
Because it is a... It's an action that happens because of a genuine feeling.
Right.
It's not manufactured. In fact, that's what flippancy is. It's you're manufacturing a lack of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Our natural reaction to things is laughter.
Right.
And it does. It is part of it. I mean, sometimes we have laughter because we're just like, you are so good, God. How could you want to save a sinner like me? And then I laugh because that just blows my mind.
Right.
There's also a part of it. Like, life is funny. It's weird. and so I was realizing that a lot of Christians can look at laughter as a form of licentiousness, the opposite of legalism, mm-hmm. you know, that we think if you're laughing, you're not taking the Bible seriously enough, or you're not taking church seriously enough. And I find that pushes a lot of people out of church.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's the exact point of this chapter.
Yeah.
Like, he starts off really in the very beginning. He says, you speak of there being great laughers. I trust this does not mean that you are under the impression that laughter is such, laughter as such is always in our favor.
Yeah.
In other words, just because they're laughing doesn't mean it's good for us.
No.
And I think God owns everything.
Right.
God owns all the emotions. God owns joy and happiness and humor. I mean, read the Bible. There's irony all throughout it. God has an incredible sense
yeah,
of humor.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, that's, you know, I think we even kind of started with your story. It's like Christians need to reclaim the arts and the culture. And I think Christians need to reclaim joy and fun and humor as well.
Right. And that word, laugher, that's a very English derogatory term for people who don't take things seriously.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I could hear my mum saying, oh, you're a laugher, right?
Okay.
In other words, you're just not willing to take things seriously. Not that you're not having a good time,
sure.
But there's different moments when you're supposed to take things more serious, and you're not, and you fall into that flippant
sure.
area where it's like that lack of respect and seriousness for something that needs to be held in that regard.
Well, keeping things in regard, you know, he's the defining point is a little bit further down, but he talks about the two different kinds of reasons to say a joke, whether it's because the incongruency of it is funny, right? Like, there's, you know, sex is actually kind of funny. It's, you know, weird, you know, and it's easy to make jokes of, right? But there's other parts like, I want to make a joke about it because I want to talk about sex, because I want to, like, get my mind on those things.
Right.
And that's it. Well, also, you know, looking at Ephesians, this is the chapter five and four. I'm looking at this going, yeah, I'm so close to the evils of the flesh because I like jesting, and I don't want to say I like coarse jesting, but I can laugh at a funny joke and sometimes a coarse joke.
Right.
And it's butting up against all these other things like fornication, being an unclean person, covetousness, and we realize, okay, there is this part where you know you crossed a line, but then you put you in this camp where, oh, maybe I should avoid humor altogether. And I don't. Right. And C.S. Lewis is suggesting, no, that's a bad idea, because now we're going to leave the joy of laughter behind too. Right. And so. But there's the other side of it where in Matthew, in the Sermon on the Mount, talks about let your yes be yes and your no be no. And then that flippancy that we read about later in the chapter is where we start to just make light of everything, and because nothing has meaning anymore. And at the end of, what is this verse? This is chapter 5 of Matthew. But let your yes be yes and no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one.
Hmm.
Which I almost feel like this birthed this letter.
That's interesting.
Dig deeper into that.
Yeah, unpack that.
Well, because here's my problem. I guess God made me this way. I'm not blaming him, but he gives my brain major caffeine for humor, right? Like, I'm able to jump the joke to the point where people have no idea what I'm talking about. But I love a good joke. And the thing is, part of it is I feel like I'm going to say the thing everyone's thinking. I probably shouldn't say it sometimes, but everyone's thinking. So I'm like, you know what? I'll just say it because it's funny, all right? And then, boom, we get this joke. I get myself in trouble a lot. But then there's part of me goes, everyone else is thinking it. I just want to try to be as transparent as possible, right? Now, I'm not saying that's my excuse, but sometimes that really is my heart. It's like, I'm just saying the thing that seems kind of funny to me. And I don't mean to make light of things. Mm-hmm. But when I try to make light of things because I feel shame or because I'm trying to avoid some deeper things with me that need to be cleaned out, then I'm flippant.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm not worried about, like, dealing with myself, like when I'm in my Bible, I'm looking at myself in the mirror and going, wow, I'm terrible and I need salvation and I need God, you need to check my heart. And that's when I notice my humor is okay and I'm not beating myself up, even if the jokes aren't gotten, mostly about my kids, because I think it's just all dad humor. But there's the other side of it where I realize I'm saying something because I'm avoiding the issue.
Mm.
And I'm using humor to avoid my shame, my guilt, or my sense of something is wrong.
I've been there. Yeah,
it's just a mask. It's just a filter.
Totally.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, fun, right? So he talks about joy. Talks about fun, having a good time, being happy, engaging in things that make people smile. That's also super important. And again, on the positive side of living a good life, fun within your relationship, fun within your family, all of that needs to be there as well. And I look at the way he talks about it in here, and he's talking, going back to, like, you know, the patients, like, tied up with these people who all they're having is a very shallow time.
Very superficial.
It's very superficial, yeah. Right. But they believe he's going to keep coming back to this because he enjoys it. And the patient feels like, well, you know, these are my friends. We get together and you go away empty, but you laughed your way through it.
Mm.
So there's got to be a bit of a fine line in here, right? Between, and he gives these four towards scornful, that where does it start to cross over?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's to your point. It's obviously context is one of them.
Also, he says, make sure your patient doesn't know what kind of person they are, because once they figure that out, and that delineation where you go, hey, I'm being flippant, because we're going to fall into it because we're broken, sinful people. But then you can get corrected. You can repent. But there's also part of it, you go, once you're aware that you're using humor as a way of trying to create joy or at least laughter in the room, then you know that you're not doing this because you're avoiding a serious mm-hmm. issue. Or you're trying to mock God, right, which is right. what a lot of this is. And this is why you see a lot of comedians who become very angry and very dark. Because laughter is on this part of flippancy in their own lives. And you wonder, how did that person commit suicide or just have
about
a
Robin
disaster?
Williams.
Exactly. I always think of him. Like he was a joy to me, you know, his comedy. And then where was the darkness? Because the humor was hiding something. It was a flippancy on his part, too.
No, absolutely. Mm.
But I think it's also true that, like, as you get down the list, so joy, you know, I would find it difficult for the demonic to distort joy. True joy is almost only a godly thing.
Right. And he even makes that joke about them in heaven.
Yeah, it's opaque to us. They can't even comprehend joy. Fun, I think it's something that, you know, the playful instinct, you know, fun is definitely something that God intends for us. But he even mentions sometimes it can get us a little off track. Fun can be a distraction. You know, I spent a big season of my life golfing too much, playing baseball too much, skiing too much. I had a ton of fun. I wasn't doing anything sinful, but it's probably pulling me away from God's best. Set me back a few years in life. And then as you go down, like the joke proper, that's where you kind of have good common ground where you can have good godly jokes. Or like you were saying, Corey, people using jokes as an opportunity to, you know, just use it as an excuse to have lewd jokes and talk about sex. You know, it also that's the opportunity to kind of cover up shame. So people are making jokes to make a covering for shameful things, and they can even explain away what would otherwise be a shameful thing,
right? With a joke.
With a joke. So you can be obese. You can be crude. You can be lazy. You can have a whole host of poor, you know, anti-virtues. You know, vices. And if you can pitch it in the form of pitching in such a way that makes everyone in the room laugh, it goes away. You know, so I think as you get down towards the joke proper, and then definitely down into the flippancy is where you really start to see the opportunity for like the shadow side of.
Screwtape points out in here that when you have people who have fallen there. Almost call them, and we've used this word before in there, call them puritanical.
Right.
And it will shame them into just keep going because they don't want to be, they'd rather not be called puritanical than thinking.
There's that word again, I saw that in there.
Then their overt sarcasm is something to worry about.
So I want to mention something else, a little piece of history from. A little piece of British history or English history here. It talks about the fact that the English, they take their sense of humor so seriously that the deficiency in the sense is almost the only deficiency at which they feel shame.
Yes. Guilty.
Yeah. Humor can be a good therapy. You know, it can be a great part of life, but it can go too far. During the war, really difficult times in the country, during World War II, I remember researching a little bit. The limerick became very popular during that time. Are you familiar with the limerick? It's a five line poem, you know. But
and it became
A. It's an A A B B A. You know, a lady's named Sally or a countess from Bray. They turned into these crazy lewd things. But it was a cultural thing to bring a moment of levity. And it actually, I remember reading this. I should have looked this up preparing for this. But I remember reading that it got to the point where it was almost expected that you could make one up on the spot in a happenstance conversation with somebody on the street. And then
that's probably the old version of rapping.
That's true. It probably was. Yeah, yeah, it was rapping in the 40s.
And even think of this. 1940s, he's writing this. And he's even talking about comedians who were lewd and crude and over the top back then. But compared with where Richard Pryor and everyone else went, what on earth were they saying, right, that would consider that sort of designation back then? You know, so... Get into the takeaways from this, right? You've got, and this could be you. This could be you, one of our listeners out there. You've got this relationship where it's shallow. You come away from it. You don't know you don't know where there was any depth. You never talked about anything serious. It was all fun, games, and you're just left feeling empty. And you realize that you're having that just because you are having a good time isn't growing you and isn't growing your walk with Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely say be really aware of your sense of humor. I know there have been times in my life where on the flippancy side, I've been given to cynicism. But that's where the Proverbs talks about some of the main characters in Proverbs are the scoffers. Those are the people who are constantly cynical. And it's like they can find the negative in any situation and dismiss virtue. So definitely know yourself, kind of like you were saying, Corey, like be aware. Am I using humor to filter? Am I using it to mask, you know, other things? Am I using it to explain away things that I shouldn't be doing? Am I an overly cynical person? How does humor, joy, fun, how does that land in your life personally?
Yeah, and context. And it's all down to context. So, Corey, thank you so much for joining
us. It's been an honor. So much fun.
Any takeaway thoughts for our listeners from you?
Well, you've heard the term the left can't meme, you know. the reason for that is all humor has to be based in reality. Right, there has to be an element of truth in things, and
but
so.
What about when Kathy Griffith took the Trump head? That was hilarious.
It's so funny, right? and we can reclaim humor. So my takeaway is I struggle that the church is split, and we have so many different denominations and versions of churches because I think if humor is a dividing issue for a lot of people. It should never belong in a holy setting, or it should not belong in a place where we're taking this so seriously. Well, I find that a lot of the churches that are growing right now have embraced humor as part of our identity in Christ.
We need to take God seriously, but not ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a healthy thing, and it brings joy.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us. And to everyone, that's the conclusion of Screwtape Letters number 11. We'll see you next time.
Okay, and real quick, while we're still recording, are we still going?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you have any other thoughts on anything, any other big takeaways? We can always edit it back in later. Yep. Anything else you wanted to share on the chapter in general?
Well, the thing that caught me was this was a stumbling block for me in my walk because I've always been told, Corey, that's not appropriate. And
you, me, both.
Oh, well, it's funny. I like British humor, so I watch Monty Python.
Yeah.
Tower?
You watch Life of Brian, then.
Oh, yeah. Life of Brian, absolutely. And the thing is, they do make fun of faith. They make fun of Catholicism. They make fun of the Crusades, everything, right? And so,
it's just a flesh wound,
right? Exactly. And so I got caught a lot saying, Corey, you can't joke about this stuff. This is serious stuff, and that actually made me angry at Christianity, and it caused me to want to walk away from it. And I did in college, but then I found that everything true can be tested. And I can ask all the right questions and even laugh at things because I'm not afraid anymore, having met my Savior,
right,
and know what being reborn truly means, and having a counselor that I can talk to and convicts me of my sin on a daily basis, that there's no topic that's really
off limits
anymore. Yeah. No. And humor can help deal with uncomfortable things. It's actually a really great tool. And so for me, I go, okay, I don't have to be this puritanical person, as he was saying, or I don't have to become legalistic. That there is that part of it where that God didn't make me this way so that I could be condemned, or I condemn myself every single day, which is what I did, which it caused me to walk away.
Right.
And I just felt like I don't belong.
That would cause you to walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that was the way you're confronted with everything.
Well, and I think this is what happens with a lot of young believers. I go, all of a sudden, everything's very austere, mm-hmm. and I have to do all these things, and I can't be myself, and I can't hang out with these people. For sure, if there's dangerous relationships in your life, you're going to want to walk away from it.
You're religious to have that rule.
Right.
Just common sense.
Well, then they become boring, and people become really weird, and like all of a sudden you have to, you know, only wear a 3-piece suit every single day or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with the 3-piece suit, but I would just say this to people that are struggling with this and think, I have to become this very boring person. You don't have to. God is not boring. Mm-hmm. The Bible, as you read through it, is fascinating, and there's crazy people in there, and they're finding their Lord and Savior.
Yeah.
In all circumstances.
So, Life of Brian. My mother died in 2017. We had a funeral in early 2018. She died just before Christmas. And me and my three brothers got together and we watched The Life of Brian the night before her funeral. And so my brother's up there in a very serious service and he starts stumbling over some words. One of my brothers chirps out, "Conjugate the verb."
Oh, I love it.
Which totally broke that. That's sarcasm, right? Everyone in the church laughed, right?
It creates a moment of levity, you know.
Seriously. And my mother wouldn't have even found that funny. She'd have been just like, "Oh, really?" But that's just that English sarcasm. It just knows no bounds. And I've known, especially Americans who go over there and they're like, "These are the rudest damn people in the world." I'm like, no, they're just sarcastic. I don't know if they mean anything mean by it or there's no viciousness to it.
Right.
They're just sarcastic to a T.
Can I ask a little bit what the sarcasm is meant to do? Is it to help lighten the mood, or is it because I hear this all the time, and he writes about this British seriousness all the time.
I think it was an antidote to that stiff upper lip British sort of thing, that you had one part of the England that was always serious about everything.
Right.
The Lords and everything else was all. And then you had the working man who was just, they were being persecuted and they were in poverty, and they just started finding everything funny. And so the sarcasm grew definitely out of the working class.
Well, forgive me, but one of my favorite moments in movies is in Naked Gun when Lieutenant Frank Drebin, you remember this? It was one of the movies. It was the first Naked Gun. Anyways, he's supposed to introduce the queen. And he says, no matter how much we think having a queen is stupid to us, you know, he's introducing the queen. It's like it's such a cudgel because, you know, as Americans, we're meant to make fun of royalty.
Right.
And I know the British make fun of the royalty too, but they don't like when other people make fun of the royalty.
No, absolutely.
So what is that?
No, but that's the same way as when if you had like, "Oh, my wife's this," and then someone chips in, "Yeah, your wife's that," you'd be like, "Hang on a second."
I'd say
it, you're just not. it's the same thing. But yeah, English is like, if you get along with enough English people and you live in England for long enough, I've known people come back with a totally different sense of humor after that.
Yeah, they're very fun and very smart. Let me just say
it's like smart humor. Like, yeah. Monty Python's very smart humor. And some of it's ridiculous, but I think Life of Brian is amazingly well done.
It is.
Yeah. The first time I watched Monty Python, I watched it.
Have you seen Life of Brian?
No.
So some people sit back when it first came out, were like, it's anti-Christian, it's blasphemous, blah, blah. And no, it's not, because there's a scene where everyone's rallying around Brian, and in the background, they've got Jesus and his followers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, he's over there, yeah.
I think that's a little bit of a nod to, like, we're not parodying Jesus here. We're parodying people who will follow anything.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And he didn't want to be followed. He's like, this is, you know, like puppy dogs all of a sudden following me because I have a slab of meat strapped to my leg.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't want this life. Jesus did.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's hysterical. I mean, if you want, I'll check it out.
But the first time I watched Monty Python, I was surprisingly later in life, like 30 years old, young 30s. I watched it at home with Jules. It was on, whatever, Netflix or something. And we turned it on and it was like 10 minutes into the movie. 15 minutes of the movie, I didn't laugh once. But I turned to Jules and I said, this is a very funny movie. I wasn't laughing.
You're listening.
But I was listening and I was enthralled and I said, this is very smart and very clever. And she's like, yeah, can we turn it off? But I'm like, all right, fine. But it wasn't like belly buster. I wasn't really laughing, but I was appreciating every moment. It's so clever, you know.
Yeah. No, we had with John Cleese, we had also Fawlty Towers. He is the owner with his wife, and his wife's very much like in charge, and he's like the idiot sort of thing, but he thinks he's in charge, running like a bed and breakfast in England.
Mm-mm.
If you've ever seen it, it's like,
that's
when we were saying about John Cleese being that angry, like arrogant, he plays that part as well. And it's sort of just, he plays who he is in a lot of ways. And that's brilliant too. And I think they only made one season of that. And then
it's only one season?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. So many sketches. They were so good at it too. They just were able to come up with anything.
Yeah.
Like the one sketch that they did that talked about the man who wanted to be a woman. Oh, it's like prophecy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, have you seen that one?
Oh, no, they have a lot. in there. Yeah, you brought that up before.
Yeah. And I played that. I think I played
it. That's on Life of Brian.
Oh, that is that's Life of Brian. Okay, I know what Life of Brian is. That's a scene from Life.
That's actually
of Brian.
A meme right now too.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not the Palestinian Liberation Army. We're the Liberation Army of Palestine.
Yeah.
Totally different.
Right. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But that meant about, you're not a woman.
Yes, I am.
Right. Well, there's a history going back to Shakespeare and even the Greeks with, you know, all men are dressed up as women to play the parts, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was it was part of the humor too. Is why you were able to kind of make Shakespeare wrote a lot of dirty jokes,
right?
You know, but if there was a woman on stage, it wouldn't have been as funny. But there's men dressed up as women, they were able to say the sex jokes a little bit easier. Yeah. So when my wife teaches Romeo and Juliet, and she kind of shares the context, they're like, their students, Mrs. Hershey, you can't talk like that in school. I'm like, well, Shakespeare wrote it. You know, they're like, this is really dirty. I'm like, well, he had a body sense of humor.
He did.
Yeah, there's so many good scenes. Like the stoning scene in Life of Brian is hysterical, and it so lampoons today's culture.
I just remember at one point John Cleese saying something about his humor was attached to anger. And he realized he was very funny because he was able to tap into his anger.
But that's Fawlty Towers.
Yes.
He's always mad at his wife or the Spanish waiter that works for him. Why? You know, it's like, well, Polly.
Yeah. It seems like there was a repentance in his... in his comedy at that moment when he said it. It just seemed like he was reflecting on going, I was an angry person. And I wonder if he'd be willing to share that there's maybe a release from that or even an oppressive spirit. Because the whole point of this is we're talking about oppressive spirits. Anger is an oppressive spirit.
No, absolutely.